Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we got a ton of comics to talk to you about.
So many.
Let's kick it off with a big one. Outsiders, number one, from DC Comics, written by Jackson Lansing and Colin Kelly. Art by Robert Carey. Now, I gotta say, I didn't think this was going to be a big one going into it. This is like the umpteenth Outsiders title. I figured, okay, this is another Batman's non-Justice League team thing going on. That's not what it is at all.
It's further outside.
Yes. Cash me outside, if you will, right?
Oh, yeah. Good. What year is it?
It's old bad years. This book, they have kept secret what this book is, and I didn't know going in.
Same.
So, spoilers here. This is Luke Fox, who is Batwing, is putting together a new team. He recruits Batwoman, says, hey, we're going to investigate weird multiversal mysteries about the DC universe. He doesn't use those words, obviously, but that's essentially what he tells her. They are working with Lucius Fox, his dad. They ultimately reveal that there is a third member of the team who is called Drummer. Yeah. Even before that, though, I don't know about you guys. I was like, this is weird. This is basically the concept from Planetary, the old comic book from Wildstorm, written by Warren Ellis and art by John Cassaday. That's what it is. It is straight up a reboot of Planetary. Featuring the mystery that they're investigating is the Authority's carrier. There are dead century babies, which is a major plot line in the Authority and other Wildstorm books. And at the end, somebody comes in with a Planetary guy. Luke Fox is wearing Elijah Snow's white suit and jacket the entire time. This is wild.
Yeah. But cool. And I think it's this Drummer character is the one who has the Planetary book.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. That's your theory there?
I think it's pretty... I mean, she's holding drumsticks. So maybe I don't know how many drummers there are. Mm-hmm. There could be multiple drummers. Do you know how many drummers there are just out there in general?
Well, so speaking of putting things out there, let me put this out there up front. So I think it's absolutely wild that they're doing a Planetary reboot. My guess, this is just a guess, but I think part of the reason this is called Outsiders is Warren Ellis has been accused of multiple counts of sexual coercion, not necessarily assault, but definitely gaslighting and other things. He's essentially been excommunicated from comics and video games and TV and everything else that he was associated with. So I don't know if there's a financial thing there. Wildstorm definitely worked differently than DC Comics does. But I got to imagine there's a move to disassociate from his name there by calling it Outsiders. But as is.
Well.
What?
I mean, yeah. But also, like, DC has taken in the Wildstorm books for years. It's not like.
But calling this Outsiders versus Planetary, which this very clearly is, like, it's a reboot of Planetary, is. Interesting. Like, there's got to be more going on there, I think.
Well, but while there is a Wildcats book under the DC purview, like, they use all of those characters willy-nilly however they want without calling the stories that.
Sure.
There's a book we're going to talk about later with Zealot in it, and, like, that's not at all reference to that. So, like, I actually like that it's sort of coming in under the DC radar. It actually is a much better way of incorporating the worlds as opposed to I feel like sort of slamming them together feels a little strange.
Mm-hmm. What also, do you think about this, Pete?
I didn't put any of that together or have any of that kind of going on when I was reading it. I just thought that this was an interesting thing to kind of work outside of Batman, and then the kind of fear of like, oh man, once Batman finds out about this, he's gonna be pissed.
Well, there's definitely that element, but for anybody who doesn't know Planetary, the idea was, I think they were archaeologists of the impossible is what it was called. And so they were a team of three. Rather than fighting supervillains or whatever, for the most part, all they would do is kind of investigate things and be like, well, writing that down. And everything was an amalgam of other things. So there was an issue where they investigated a Frankenstein-style monster. There was an issue where they investigated something that was essentially like Godzilla. The overarching plot of Planetary was there was a group called the Four that was the DC version of the Fantastic Four, who had gotten those powers and wanted more power. So where Planetary was just sort of logging these weird things, the Four would come in and be like, we want to possess it. We want to dissect it and use that technology and become more powerful than we have been before. So we don't really get that in this issue, but that's got to be coming, I feel like.
Yeah, and like I thought this was great. I love Batwoman as sort of the locus point of the hero here, which is very cool. The Luke Lucius Fox stuff, they're characters who have been on the periphery of the Bat family for a while. Bringing them in is cool. I feel like we're going to get another hero in here, though, probably, right? Outside of Drummer?
I don't think so. It's three people in Planetary, and I feel like that's what they're sticking with.
I just mean we'll touch on more. Like, I think there's a way to do this book that isn't about those mysteries. It could incorporate more DC stuff.
I think that's what I think the idea is it's Planetary. Instead of investigating like sort of iconic pop culture mysteries, it's investigating DC stuff. And that's, you know, they tip their hand there in terms of investigating the Authority's carrier in this first issue. I will say, I feel like Luke Fox is a weird fit here. I don't know if he fits into that role of like the enigmatic leader in the same way that I would want, but I do like Batwoman in here. The Drummer is very interesting. I love the shout out to John Cassaday. We get a Dr. Cassaday as the one person who stays behind, interfaced with the Authority at the Authority's carrier at the end of the issue. So this is very cool.
It's weird how you've just put in kind of a funky accent on that. But I also think that what, yeah, it's Cassaday.
No, there's an A between the D and the
Y. He's got a sneaky A in there. Mm-hmm. He's Cassaday. Got three A's.
It's just this, like the, all right, anyways.
He's a real triple A artist.
I mean, this is, you know, what's interesting about the Drummer is they've got to get close enough to just, you know, be able to do that, big tap. Otherwise, that power is kind of useless.
Well, like all drummers, you want to be close to the instrument.
Yes.
They don't do much when they're just drumming on the air. But her name is Drummer, not the Drummer. I would also say that Kelly and Lansing over on their Captain America book and the Marvel side of things felt like it was right next to this, with it talking about the secret societies, the Shield, the Circle, all that. So the moving over here and sort of getting closer to perhaps the home property for that is really cool.
Carnage number one from Marvel, written by Torin Kronbeck, art by Per Perez. In this book, not a huge spoiler here, you can see it on the cover, but the Carnage suit, who has become all powerful all on its own and gotten rid of all of its weaknesses, ultimately is sent back to Earth and recreates Cletus Cassaday's body by vomiting him up on out of somebody else's body, I think is what's going on here. Reconstitutes him and basically decides to destroy Flash Thompson's life utterly and completely. There's also a religious thing going on here. What did you guys think about this first issue?
This is very dark, but also really kind of fits nicely. I love all the setup and all the kind of first issue kind of stuff that they were doing here. I think it's really fucked up, but it's also like, ooh, this is kind of crazy and interesting to see this kind of take on this character. So I don't know. I thought it did a great job as a first issue. I got excited to read more.
Torin talked about this book to us at Baltimore Comic Con in a great interview. If you haven't heard that, it's very worthwhile. Like, she loves Carnage. She loves the sort of sociopathy of that, of Cletus, and the way that he sort of moves through things. And like the way that this story just introduces horrifying elements, sort of a page before, then we see it, and then it's horrible, I think is a nice trap to fall into.
I am always very trepidatious about a Carnage book just because I don't like the goop side of the Marvel Universe.
You hate goop.
I don't.
You're not also a goop person.
It's very hard to take a character like Carnage, who essentially was created because Venom was supposed to be an unrepentant villain. They turned him into an anti-hero, so they're like, oh, let's make somebody even worse than Venom, Carnage. How do you make him as the title character? And the idea here of turning, riffing off the idea that he was a god, there was the whole spiral circle thing that Donny Cates did leading up to the King in Black stuff. Riffing off that in a more grounded religious way, pitting him directly against Flash Thompson, a character that I really like as anti-Venom, and I think is really interesting.
Yeah,
yeah,
I think is great. Like, that's a great way of positioning it. So not that I was necessarily harumph with this book, but you really need to win me over with a Carnage book, and this definitely did.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would also say the difference is there. It's pulling it back from the godlike powers of the previous incarnations and getting us more into the more serial killer cat-mouse game that I think we're going to get into with this series, and that feels very fun.
Yeah, I'd also give a shout-out to Per Perez's art, which doesn't shy away from the disgusting, gory horror throughout the book. There's some very gross stuff that happens in here. This is 100% for adults. Don't hand it to a kid in your life.
Lotus I had my Land. Daughter read it aloud to me, and she really loved
smart.
It.
Smart.
Lotus Land, number one for Boom Studios, written by Darcy Von Poelgeest, art by Chao Felipe. This is an entirely new sci-fi story. I almost hesitate to say too much about it, other than there is a detective who is living in a cabin with his kid. He's raising him. He gets called, of course, back for one last case.
Oh, it's, every time you think you got out, they pull you back in.
But the way that this book very slowly weaves out what's going on is at first you're like, okay, it's just a detective living with his kid. And, oh, nope, a spaceship is landing. And, oh, nope, there's this big sci-fi story. What are keepers? What's going on here? We get way more mystery and psychic stuff happening by the end. This is from the same writer as Little Bird, a title
yes.
that we absolutely loved.
Yeah.
And I think this brings the same level of originality, uniqueness, and emotional intensity that that title did. I was blown away by this. I'm very excited to read more.
Yeah, this was one of the top picks of the week. I mean, what a comic. What a start. Yes, please. Art all day, day. This is just such an amazing tone, such an amazing pace. Just like unbelievable storytelling. I loved every single panel of this. It was just so great.
What do you think about the fact that it was set in the year 2648? Feels like a long time.
Mm-hmm. Like you can't too picture long? It in your head. Like you can't relate to it.
625 years?
That's feels far like from now.
Yeah.
Not relatable to the common man.
That's what I'm saying. It's
I'll be a head in a floating jar at that point.
That's a real dream.
Sorry, so that's the jar is floating, but not
yeah, yet. On the sea. The jar is floating on the sea, and there's no the water in the jar.
The head is too heavy. It's at the bottom of the jar, but the jar is floating.
Yeah, and there's no water in there. It's just a sort of a skull, really.
Real quick, Justin, sorry to ask this. Do you have any opinions on the comic book?
The comic book we're talking about? Yes, I also enjoyed this. Very good. I like the art. The story is intriguing. I like the way we sort of paced out slow play the sci-fi elements here. Very excited for more.
Speed Force number
and
one.
And more about Pete's head.
We got to find out more about that.
How did that head get there?
Why is it not floating?
It should be in liquid if he wants to come alive.
The people want to know. Speed Force number one from DC Comics, written by Jarrett Williams, art by Daniel DiNicolo. This new title is teaming up two speedsters, Wally West and Avery Ho, in a new title as they not investigate speed mysteries, but team up and sort of like fight.
Yeah, they're running.
Yeah. Now, I know you guys don't like speedster stuff. What do you think about this book?
I mean, it's not that I hate speed. I like to run. It makes me smile. I think I'll go another mile. But this feels like a little bit. Just a little poem. So I'll throw. I like to insert poetry. I like to insert poetry into my life. This feels like the tone of the book is a little strange to me. I don't quite understand it because it gets very fun by the end. It's very just like superhero-y and hanging out for a while. And then it's sort of like, here's some new villains that are pretty wacky. And I turned off by that. I like that. In fact, I think that's something that the Flash family could use more of, is just like wild, weird, as opposed to super like lighthearted hero with super dramatic situation, which I think a lot of Flash books are. So I hope that's where this book firmly goes.
Yeah, I thought the art style was really young and fun and had like a really great look to it.
I agree with you on the art. I thought Daniel DiNicolo's art was very propulsive, which is exactly what you want out of a speedster book.
Yes.
The characters are sort of almost extended, like they're sort of stretching out of the page.
They're stretchy.
Points. They're very stretchy.
They're not goopy, nice. Alex.
No,
they're stretchy. Not.
I will agree with you, Justin. I had a hard time holding on to the plot of this book. I want to know more about Wally West and Avery Ho and why we're following them as characters versus, hey, they're not in other books. What if we put them in a book together and see what happens? What is this story? Why are we following them? Why do we care about them? That's something I don't necessarily know yet out of this first issue, and I'm hoping we develop as it goes along.
Hey, why don't we next talk about a book that you were really looking forward to talking about, Alex?
Absolutely. Superior Spider-Man number one from Marvel, written by Dan Slott, art by Mark Bagley and Nathan Stockman. Finally, as we've demanded it, the Superior Spider-Man is back. Kind of. We're getting two stories here. The first one is spinning right off, confusingly, of the Superior Spider-Man Returns one-shot, where Doc Ock is trying to investigate the missed memories that he doesn't remember from his time as Superior Spider-Man when he was in Peter Parker's body. And meanwhile, there's a new villain called Supernova who is coming directly after Spider-Man, when actually she wants to attack Superior Spider-Man. In the backup story, we find out a little bit about what was going on with Spider-Boy during the years of Superior Spider-Man. Here's the thing, and I know Pete 100% disagrees with me. I love the Superior Spider-Man era. I think it is great. It was bold storytelling, really smartly done, exactly in Dan Slott's wheelhouse. And I am so happy to revisit it. I think the riff he's visiting here, I'm going to give you a spoiler for the end, but by the end of the first story, Doc Ock finally remembers that he was in Peter Parker's body. So now he knows that Peter Parker is Spider-Man. Legitimately, when I read that, I was like, oh, shit. Oh, this is great. Because that's such danger for Peter and such a power position with Doc Ock in. That's good. The backup story, I'm still not sold on Spider-Boy as a character, but I think, again, this is a smart Dan Slott idea of, hey, what was up with Spider-Boy during these years when Doc Ock was in Peter Parker's body? So overall, I really love this issue. Mark Bagley, impeachable in terms of art. Nathan Stockman is great.
Unimpeachable.
No, he's impeaching.
You're impeaching him? You're impeaching the artist?
I'm impeaching him.
You're filing articles of impeachment?
It seems like you're going against what you said there.
Yeah. Arrest him. throw Mark Bagley in jail for this issue.
This is just great Dan Slott comics. I mean, he, you know, this is just, he is doing such a fun, having so much fun. It comes through. You can really see his passion and his work here, and it's hard to ignore. I don't like Superior Spider-Man, but I do like what he's doing in this issue. Yeah, love the art.
I like Superior Spider-Man as well. It was a fun era. I feel like we have competing Spider-Man continuity to the point where, like, I just want the editorially them to order this a little bit, because it just feels like, is this book it? Is Spider-Boy the future of Spider-Man? Because that's what this book is saying. And the other book is, the Zeb Wells book is telling these other very different stories, jumping into different genres and doing wild things. And I don't know. I feel like for some reason these books are competing in a way. And Dan Slott is pushing Spider-Boy so hard. And I see his passion for it. I want a little bit of a pullback on it for my reading. Because if I'm buying a Superior Spider-Man book, that's what I want. Like, I want to get into that. And so much of this in the front and back story is Spider-Boy being like, this is about me. And Spider-Man's talking to Spider-Boy about, like, well, here's the things that happened. And I just feel like it feels like a press from the writer. And when you can feel that in the story, I think it hurts the experience.
Justin, I hate to flex on you here, but if you had children, you would understand that they are annoying and they ask questions all the fucking time. You know what I mean? So I think maybe, you know, if you knew that, you would kind of appreciate the truth of it a little bit more.
Sorry, I couldn't hear you. I was just getting a series of texts from my children. What were you saying?
Well, I always think about my children as more of a Parliament of Rooks. Number one from Comixology by Abigail Jill Harding. This is a wild fantasy story about a birdman who just loves a lady and wants to live his life. That's the simplest way of putting it. What'd you guys think about this one?
I thought this was another amazing first issue. Dark in all the right ways. I loved it. The art is super tight bananas and does such a great job of pulling you into the story with the dark kind of colors, the almost charcoal feel to it. Yeah, it's just, it's great. It's very cool.
Yeah, I enjoyed this as well. It feels a little bit like a more serious Hellboy. Or a Hellboy without, like, all of the, like, I'm getting punched by this thing energy and getting into the romance and relationship side of it. But from our perspective, very much in that world.
This feels a little bit like a dream to me. And I say that complimentarily just in terms of the pacing of it, because every couple of pages, I wasn't 100% sure of what continuity we were in with these characters, like who is the main character, what is actually happening. But that's okay. It feels like an old school Vertigo book in that way, in a certain way, where it's like, yeah, man, we're just having some fun with experimentation with form. And the designs of the characters are bloody and terrifying. So yeah, I was into this as well. Batman and Robin, number 3 from DC Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Simone DiMeo. Batman and Robin, just trying to make it work as partners and as father and son. Can they do it?
Can you do both?
I don't know. Can men have
ever sidekick? Have you ever sidekicked for your dad?
Nightmare scenario.
What'd you guys think about this one?
Yeah, I thought this was really cool. It's dark but unique. I really love the style. There's a lot going on. Love the Batman and Robin relationship in this. There's tons of action, twists and turns. Fun last panel. I mean, this is a great story.
How do we feel about the name Shush?
Pulled me out of it.
Is that a cheat? Is that a little bit of a cheat to be like, hush? No, I'm Shush.
Shush. Yeah, I was like, did we really, Shush is what we're going to go with?
And who's next? Like, Shush, Shush, or just like.
The next is the little old lady in the corner eating mush.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to her. I love mush, and I love when she's eating
mush. Shush. I also, and this is a weird thing, I don't love White Rabbit just because that feels like, no, wait, that's a Spider-Man villain.
Oh, I thought it was a Matrix reference.
Yes, that's where White Rabbit started.
Matrix.
Yeah, not without Follow the White Rabbit.
Yeah. This is a reference.
There wasn't an actual White Rabbit in the Matrix, though, was there?
Yeah, there was. Not it was a rabbit tattoo, but still White Rabbit.
Right, and that, just to be clear, came from the Matrix and nowhere else?
Nowhere else. Yeah, that's the only place.
Yeah,
I mean, Simone de Beauvoir's art in this book.
I said earlier,
the word is kinetic, I think, here. Alien, number one from Marvel, written by Declan Shalvey, art by Andrea Brocardo and Declan Shalvey. This, despite the new number one, is kicking right off of Declan Shalvey's previous run on Alien, which found a young girl trapped on an ice planet full of aliens. She is the lone survivor. Very similar to the Predator series that they just did for Marvel. We are continuing that. And following her years later, she has a vendetta with the aliens, with the Weyland-Yutani Corporation. And that's what we're seeing play out here. This is far more complicated than the previous run, but I still think there's some very interesting ideas at play here, and I'm curious to see where it goes.
Me too. I really like how tight the continuity they've created here is, where they're just really following up. They're taking some time and continuing to plug in the classic alien things we want to see into these same places with different factors coming into it. It's a great way to sort of hold on to a type of story, an alien story, while also bringing us a new version of it.
Yeah, I mean, I thought this was great. I really liked the art and loved all the kind of close calls and tense moments that you get from an alien project. So I feel like they nailed that. There was a little part of me that was like, underwater aliens, all right. I mean, I guess like we've had aliens in space, we've had aliens here. Like, all right, sure, the underwater aliens, okay. But other than that, I think it's really great.
I will say I really like the visuals of that. There's a panel towards the end of the issue that I think was an Andrea Brocardo issue that shows the aliens just sort of almost like kelp on a coral reef or something like that.
Yeah.
That was pretty terrifying. And the designs of these all white aliens with sort of like a little fuzz around their necks, I think, is very cool.
Agreed. They look like fuzz. Lobsters. They look like lobsters. They belong under the sea.
Oh, man. Keep that bit going.
Let's move to an advance issue. The Bloody Dozen, number one. This is out December 13th from Image Comics. Written by Charles Soule, art by Alberto Jimenez Albuquerque. This is continuing the Shrouded College storyline that started with Hell to Pay, I think was the first series. So there's going to be a series of six series that are going to tell different genre stories in the Shrouded College. Then we're going to get a seventh one that's going to bring everything together. This one, I can spoil this because this is in the solicit text and they put it out there. This is a vampire heist. It's in the solicit text. He talks about it.
Don't understand you.
It's allowed. Why are you worried?
Yeah, what are you worried about?
I talk about a comic, you're like, you're spoiling it, asshole. You give away the whole fucking plot and it's fine.
Well, I mean, it's in the solicit text. So there you go. Anyway, I thought this was great. I actually like this even better, I think, than the first series, just in terms of being like a high-octane action movie concept. Very fun.
Yeah, it's in the same world, but this one is the pace is faster, like you're saying, and the tone is a little bit more like an early Rick Remender book. It has sort of like a little bit of Fear Agent energy, or the sort of like what was the one where the guy, he's a biker and he inherits all the power to take on?
Cosmic Ghost Rider.
No. It's like the Scumbag. Yeah. It has a little bit of that tone to it. And I was surprised by that.
About Scumbag?
A little bit. Like, it has a little bit of that pace to it. And that sort of, it's much looser and sort of lighter than I expected. So I was surprised to see that, but I like this. I'm curious to see how all these books, six books, will tie together.
Yeah, I thought it escalated really quickly in a kind of badass kind of way. Speaking of badasses, you had a badass grandpa in there. Love that. Yeah, I think this is really intense and awesome. So more, please.
Yeah. Do you feel like you have to worry about competition from a badass grandpa as a lover of badass grandmas?
I'm not sure what you're trying to insinuate.
Just like you're obsessed with badass grandmas just from in every aspect. Do you feel like a badass grandpa is like when another mallard duck shows up on a pond?
I can appreciate either one that I'm getting. If I'm getting an older person who kicks ass, I'm in.
Just all olds.
Yeah. Love.
All olds, okay. All the time. That's our pull quote for this book. Pick it up when it comes out in December. Next up, a book that actually did come out this week. Danger Street, number 11 from DC Comics, written by Tom King, art by Jorge Fornes. We're getting towards the end here. We are one issue from the end. And boy, you can really feel the tension rising as a bunch of things happen with a bunch of different characters.
You can tell it's rising because the helmet is yelling at you right from the jump. You know what I mean?
That's been true. That's in tension. Every issue. Every issue that helmet's been yelling.
Yeah, and every issue is full of tons of tension and tons of action. Sure. I think this is just another crazy-ish there's just so much going on here, but I loved all the art. The madness is so interesting and cool. The arm wrestling when there was just a pile of arms, that's insane. That was such a crazy cool idea. Really well executed and
lizard.
Well, yeah. Sorry.
Arm wrestling on a lizard man.
Yeah.
This as a penultimate issue, I feel like this issue, I was surprised how much it was sort of like, let's just chill out and set up a bunch of stuff to happen in the last issue from Tom King. I usually think more will happen leading up to it. This reminds me, this issue sort of crystallized it. This is like True Detective set in the DC universe.
Which season?
Like the first one.
Okay, good.
Or the good. Second.
Four.
Or the third.
The fourth season.
No, first season.
Or the upcoming,
if we're talking about True Detective, we talk about the first season.
Yeah.
You're not a fan of the second season?
Not as much,
no. Vince Vaughn?
I love Vince Vaughn, but, you know, it was...
He walks a lot.
Your buddy.
Oh, my God.
He says that, I think, in the season. What is going on in this book? I'm sorry. I don't know why I'm having a mental block here when I know you guys like it, but it's definitely... I read this issue, and to the point that you're making, Justin, I was like... What is happening here? How are these characters coming together? And it may still be this brilliant ending there. I will say, a couple of issues back, the fight on the rooftop I thought was
like amazing.
Contender for the issue best of the year. Jorge Fornes, gorgeous art. Love Tom King as a writer. I do not know what's going on in this book.
Well, you got to trust the process, man. You got to trust that he's going to land the ship.
Okay. I think Tom King has been in a little bit of a phase lately of being very coy with his information. And this is a big example of it.
A phase for his entire career, you think?
His whole career, yep. Yeah. I mean, not in the earlier stuff, I would argue. Just the last few years. And, you know, I like these characters. I especially like our cop character and what happens here. The part that it just, there's too many disparate threads. It's hard to see how they're going to come together, but I do think that's what the point of this is.
We shall see. Let's move on to a one-shot Star Wars Visions Peach Momoko, number one from Marvel by Peach Momoko. In come this on issue, a bunch of goop goes into some stuff.
Oh, go fuck yourself, dude. All right?
There's I mean, so that's much also more true, Pete. That's also true.
Yes, but goop, boiling it down to that undermines how
goop
beautiful.
Goes into some stuff complimentary.
Yes. Carnage. This is a Carnage. I think this is the Carnage book.
Yeah, this is a beautiful version of Carnage. No, I mean, you want to talk about buying something for the art alone. This is the issue. We're talking about super toy bananas art here. This is just... I can't say enough amazing things about the art. I really believe that this is the future of comics where you let art take up most of the panel. Don't fucking have any respect for words. They just get in the way of beautiful scenery.
That's a weird thing to say. You're saying there's going to be fewer words in future comics?
That's right.
Well, again, try paintings. This is great. It's a really nice book. And this plays into the conversation we were having about the Marvel's MCU and just like letting creators take swings at ideas, doing stuff in the world that feels and looks different. Because like if I said to you right now, Pete, tell me what happens in this story, I think you'd be like, oh, okay, no problem. Mm-hmm. Goop. Stuff.
No, that's not what I would say.
Force stuff? Sith? Nope.
That's maybe not Sith? What I would say.
Throw a Sith in there?
Why don't you, instead of telling me what I'm going to say, maybe you could ask me and then I could fulfill this prophecy.
That's a great idea, but I would never do that. Alex, no. What do you think? No, I'm just kidding. Pete, what happens in this issue?
Well, we find ourselves on this planet, and it looks like this girl is struggling with who she is and what she must do in life. And just when she gets to a really important moment in her life, somebody else steals an opportunity to make a choice and shoots somebody in the head. And their death maybe starts some kind of revolution. And this world that once had this kind of organized chaos might just fall into real chaos here. So, you know, it's tension. But like all ecosystems, you mess something up, it can really kind of send your world into a nightmare scenario.
Hmm. Nice. It reminded me of Bone a little bit. Mm-hmm. The later issues when they got into the more mythological stuff.
I guess just to wrap it up here, I thought it was nice when the goop went into the other guy. Geiger, Ground Zero.
Come on, man. Say something nice.
Beautiful art. I love Peach Momoka's art. I do agree with you. I'm being very glib, but I think, I don't know. I guess I would say this is the future of comics, you know, where writers are
wow.
That nobody cares about and artists are really lifted up. Right, Pete?
Yep.
Nice. Yeah. There was writing involved. Wow. Wow, that's wild. There was writing involved in this, Pete. It's not like it was just like the artist who is also the writer just showed up and was like, let me doodle. There was writing involved.
I know that.
Geiger, Ground Zero, number one from Image Comics, written by Jeff Johns, art by Gary Frank. This is a origin story for Geiger, the radioactive man who we've already met in the first story of the Unknown Universe, which is now part of Ghost Machine, an independent co-op of artists and writers that is a subset of Image Comics that's officially launching next year. So lots of stuff going on here. What'd you guys think about this issue?
Well, it's great to finally get the kind of origin. We kind of jumped right into the middle of action with the kind of glowing man, as I like to call him. And I just think it's cool to kind of get the story. It was interesting that it was saved for last, but it's nice to know. And, you know, you didn't think it was going to be a happy story, and it definitely isn't.
The big spoiler for me is that he loves his family.
Mm. Spoilers, didn't see that coming. Who actually loves their family? You know what I mean?
Jeff Johns and Gary Frank, great on great team. Like
great on comics.
Yeah, impeachable team, I would say, frankly.
No, it's unimpeachable. I think you've been...
Unimpeachable team, yes.
Or maybe you mean peachable.
Yeah,
Peachable.
Like great butts. Peachable. You mean great butts.
Peachable.
They both have great butts. Peachable. Yes.
Yeah, they got these super peachable.
Peach butts.
Peach butts.
Anyway, this story is unnecessary to tell because we already kind of got it in Geiger, but if you're going to tell it, I'm glad to have Jeff Johns and Gary Frank on it because they're two masters working at the peak of their form.
Agree. Because I felt like we had sort of seen elements of this already. And then at the end of this issue, it's like coming up next, the conclusion. I was like, the conclusion? This felt like a zero issue to get us going into this story. So I don't quite know what the placement of this story is, but I do like this, and I'm curious to hear more of this world. We get some more setup of what's his name, Robot Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, I think the idea here is to tie the Unknown Universe stuff a little closer together because they're launching everything, and also not saying this derogatorily, but kill time until they're launching Ghost Machine next year with a new number one. The idea there, if people don't know, is they're going to have four superhero universes. They have a bunch of top-tier writers and artists who are part of this co-op, that are exclusive to this co-op, and one of those universes is going to be the Unknown Universe. So there you go.
There it is.
Detective Comics, whoomp, there it is, as I like to say. Detective Comics 1077 from DC Comics, written by Ram V and Dan Waters. Art by Jason Sean Alexander and Casper Wingard. In the front story, Batman is about to be hung in Gotham, in the center of Gotham City, for crimes against the city. And meanwhile, Catwoman and a bunch of other folks are trying to break him out and fight against this. It is, of course, as you'd expect, caused by a demon who has infected Batman. Classic stuff. And then there's some backup stories as well that show us other aspects of the Gotham world. What'd you think about this?
Yeah, first off, epic cover. Just absolutely loved it. I love the toxic love story that we got. Oh, man, get you in the feels, man. That was really cool. But this is a total package where you get a lot of bang for your buck. So really loved it.
By toxic love story, you mean the Batman Catwoman stuff?
One of them was called Toxic Love. One of the stories in there.
Okay, great.
So that one.
Is that the backup? I think maybe.
Yeah.
The Ram V story. I think the art is fantastic by Jason Sean Alexander. Really moody, gothic. Really fits the story, and I like that this is putting Batman out of the story and putting together a team of people to try to save him. It feels like the story's been told a lot, I think, around Batman, but this one feels pretty measured and doing it in a way that feels more real than other versions of it, where it's like, we're probably going to die here. So that's fun. And I also like the second story, which had some good Solomon Grundy, my guy,
from
Starman back in the day. Like, love to see him back in prominence. Great stuff.
Deadpool, Seven Slaughters, number one from Marvel, written by Cullen Bunn, Justina Ireland, Rob Liefeld, Cody Ziegler, Steve Fox, Gail Simone, and Mark Guggenheim.
Art the Goose.
Philip Civi, Greg Land, Chad Bowers, Frederica Manson, Gerardo Sandoval, David Baldion, and Will Sportacio. This is, per the title, seven different stories of Deadpool where he kills people. He slaughters them. I didn't know what this is going in. I also don't know why this is coming out, but I did love a lot of these stories. In particular, I thought the first story by Cullen Bunn that has Deadpool just talking through the multiverse was great. Yeah. Like,
agree.
So good. What a good kickoff story. Oh, Pete, give it a no, a non no.
I saw a no face.
That's right.
What's going on, Pete?
Hard disagree on that.
Ooh.
I know why.
Yeah, you do.
There's a little
Frankencastle
image of Frankencastle in there. And that's enough to set you off?
Yeah.
Just because he's there? It's a different universe. It's a
he
different universe.
He doesn't even say anything.
He's there.
He doesn't even say, just hey, hanging Pete, out. How are you doing? It's me, it's Frankencastle.
Enough. I don't want to see him ever again.
Why?
I love last story. The Gail Simone story was also great.
Gail Simone's story was very good. But
Need to have a reason to have a bunch of great Deadpool stories. You know what I mean?
Well, but as I read this, because I like the title page was sort of deeper after the first story, and so I didn't know what was happening, and I really liked sort of walking in unexpected to this. And when I saw Frankencastle, I was like, oh, man, that's cool. I'm going to talk about this for a while, because it made me think, Pete, we don't have Frank Paws Castle. We only have Frankencastle. Frank Paws Castle is in War World. He's gone.
Right? Okay.
Or sorry, Weird World.
All right.
So like, this is the only
Frankenstein monster, right?
I'm just saying, this is the only Frank Castle you get. Don't you want to hold on to that little piece?
I don't know.
Pete's piece?
Nope.
And don't you remember when he was cut to pieces by Dokken, and that's how Frankencastle came about?
Are you having fun?
I'm just talking about the comic. I'm just talking about
as I always say, if Dokken's a rockin', don't come a knockin', right, Pete?
Yeah, thanks, horrible dad.
What?
You're a bad dad. How dare you say something about Dokken? Anyway, I agree. The real standout of the issue was that one panel where Frankencastle didn't say anything. Why don't we move on to Dutch number zero from Image Comics, written by Chap Yap and Joe Casey, art by Nathan Fox. In this issue, we're getting like, I don't know, I would say a old school Image 90s character who's retired doing a John Wick. He is attacked. He's pulled back into the game. Very fun issue. I had a good time.
Yeah, it's badass. It's kind of like a Cyborg meets Rambo type of situation, but great art, fun book, fast paced, tons of action. Love it, even though it's a fucking zero issue.
Well, Pete, just back to back bummers. Only not no comment on the book because
it's going to be back to back
to
back because fucking Green Lantern's next.
Okay, just wait. Shouts to Nathan Fox, old friend of the show. I haven't seen a lot of work from him. So love to see it here. Really great. This comic, it reminds me of a less irreverent, more sort of self-serious local man, the Tim Seeley book that I've been really enjoying, also from Image. And this, but this is really great. This is like if Cable was like, you know, my life is actually hard, and now I'm even older than I was when I was fighting these people, and now all my chickens are coming home to roost. This didn't even, to me, read like a zero issue. This read like a true number one, so I'm very curious, and there's a slightly different team on it, what the number one is going to be like in relation to this.
But I thought agree. This was great. I wouldn't judge it by the zero issue at all. This definitely feels like the kickoff. This is like the first half hour of John Wick, but like you said, 100% with Cable. Very fun. Great art. Pick it up. Green Lantern number 5 from DC Comics, written by Jeremy Adams and Peter J. Tomasi, art by Zermanico and David LaFuente. In the front story, we're getting Sinestro is coming directly for Hal Jordan Green Lantern, and they are sparring here, leading to a twist that is weirdly telegraphed on the cover of the issue.
Bad cover choice. Bad should have saved it for next issue.
I hate that. I hate when that happens. Okay. And then we get a backup focusing on Sinestro's son over on his home planet that is apparently leading up to some sort of Sinister Sons type title from Peter J. Tomasi. But Justin, you like the front story. Pete, I believe you like the backstory. Take it away.
So, Pete, go take your headphones out while I talk, and then I will also not listen while you talk because
this is a real Jack Spratt and his wife situation. Take it away.
That's exactly the reference, the pop culture reference, I would say, that I think we're talking about. The 5-issue run here in this new series, I've been sort of like slowly, I didn't quite understand what the take was at first. And man, this, it's been slowly building on me and slowly like, oh, I see all these elements are coming together. It's written with a lot of confidence, really great art. But this issue brings together, it's the best Hal Jordan issue that's come out in years, I feel like. He gets to be a wicked hero. He gets to like throw off all the things that have been holding him down and at the same time confront his arch enemy in a way that is so strong and a great last page reveal, I thought.
The backup story, though, come on. I mean, first off, artistically, it's unbelievable. Just got such a unique look and feel to it. I really love the kind of like anime style a little bit. Just really impressive, plus a very unique story that when you open up a Green Lantern book, you don't think you're going to get. So really just impressed by it.
Were you upset about the Frankencastle reveal in this story?
This is DC, asshole.
I loved both of these stories. Aww. I thought the first story was a great Hal Jordan story. Like Justin said, really enjoying this title across the board. I think this is the mystery of what is going on with Hal Jordan's ring and where he gets his power from is great.
Yeah.
I think the twist there, there's not a twist because, again, it's on the cover, but what happens with Sinestro is really smart and interesting. And like Pete was saying, backup story is great. Peter J. Tomasi knows how to write young characters. David Lofuente's art is gorgeous and specific with its very sharp, specific lines, thick lines throughout. So really great package. Very happy with this comic book. Star Wars Dark
Alex Droid is once again the baby bear of the stack. He likes things just right.
Just right. Star Wars Dark Droids number 4 from Marvel, written by Charles Soule, art by Luke Ross. In this issue, the Scourge, who is a machine intelligence who has been taking over the droids of the Star Wars universe, is going for the flesh, wants the flesh to expand.
The meat.
And the meat. And the interesting twist of this issue, it is it created a council of various parts of its personality, leading to some big changes for the Scourge that I was not expecting, that I think are really interesting. I don't know how they're going to wrap up this particular storyline, but I'm really fascinated to see where it goes.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I thought this has been the most successful of the larger movements in the Marvel Star Wars stuff. And it is good. There's a lot of ideas on the table here. We're playing around with characters that are in the actual Star Wars movies. Though one of my takeaways here is like, isn't there something where R2-D2 can just sort of sit it out?
Oh, he can just, go fuck yourself.
He can just not be.
He was a fucking one bright spot to this whole thing. What the fuck are you talking about?
I'm just saying he's a center of every story. I'm like, give this guy, take him a break. Maybe he's just not at the right place at the right time all the time. Is all I'm saying about this droid that can. He's on two bad roller skates. Like his wheels barely work.
How dare you?
Go have him sit somewhere for a minute.
Did you like though? I mean, in this book, we essentially get like the droid Avengers. We get a team up of all the droids that you absolutely know for the most part, all teaming up together to be like, hey, we want to help you take down the Scourge. That's great. That's fun.
That is cool. Yeah, I agree with that. I'm just always surprised that R2-D2 is like, here I am at the center of the story once again. I'm like, how are you always there? You barely can move.
It's boggles. You're like, well, man, I love Star Wars, and man, but R2-D2 always being the hero. That's if you like Star Wars, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, I know. It's just funny to me. In the comics, they could do a different thing.
Anyways, this Dark Droids thing has been super scary and very emotional, and I was really worried about how this was all going to show up. But then, out of nowhere, my boy R2-D2 showing up, straight giving us hope. I lost it. I was so excited to see R2. That whole Dark Droid Council was really bumming me out and creepy in all sorts of different kinds of ways. But man, it was nice to see a little light at the end of the tunnel.
You ever walk into your kitchen and your appliances are having a council?
I would run away.
Scary, dude. When the toaster's talking, get the fuck out of there.
Yeah,
toaster's like my R2-D2, you know? Mm-hmm. He's always showing up in important situations.
Interesting.
A Haunted Girl, number 2 from Image Comics, written by Ethan Sachs and Naomi Sachs, art by Marco Lorenzana. This is following a girl who has been dealing with some serious depression issues. She's trying to get back into high school. Only problem, she's actually seeing ghosts and other spirits. Most likely, we assume that this is what is actually
happening. Gotta think that's true.
So that's kind of messing her up a little bit, but this is dealing with some very real issues at the same time as it's dealing with some fantasy issues. What do you guys think about the second issue here?
First off, the cover was just too scary. It really freaked me the fuck out. Then we had a bunch of close calls here with entities getting really close to her. But yeah, really amazing art. It's both beautiful and terrifying at the same time, which is really impressive. Yeah, I'm very worried about how this is going to turn out for her, but this is an exciting ride.
If you're a fan of the Luna Brothers, I feel like this book is a nice book to pick up in that genre of storytelling. It's fun. It's a little scary. If it's scaring Pete, it's at least a little scary. So definitely check it out.
And just to be clear, in terms of the art style, I would say it's far more Top Cow than it is Luna Brothers. But I get what you're saying about the storytelling mode. And I like it. I like that they're sticking there, with it. No, this is a shot
fired. I think he's right.
Information.
Gonna fight.
I said they're type of story. I wasn't talking about the art.
Exclusive. Justin is a stupid piece of shit.
Oh, and
how dare
wow.
you say this? Is that cool, Justin?
That's what I expected to hear.
Yeah, I really like how emotional this book is getting, and I think they're really digging into some interesting stuff here. They're not letting go of the emotional bent with the supernatural bent, and that's good. Superman Lost, number 8 from DC Comics, written by Christopher Priest, art by Carlo Bakulian. In the last issue, Lois Lane was given pancreatic cancer by Lex Luthor.
That's fun. That's a fun twist.
What are we doing?
Like,
what
here's are we the doing? Thing. When I first started reading comics, I remember as a kid, I was like, why don't these characters have pancreatic cancer? And finally, I'm getting an answer in
Twist.
Twist. So this is great. This is like, I'm going to say something derogatory that I don't even believe, but I'm going to say it anyway. This is like Tom King, but good.
What?
Wow.
And what
Wait,
I mean,
what do you mean?
What do I mean by this is like, this is
Tom King is good.
Tom King is good, but what I mean by this is, like, this is pacing it along much more quickly in terms of how they're hitting the beats. It's much more clear and less obsequious in terms of what we're actually trying to do with the title. And here we're getting, like, these very calculated moves with Superman, with Lois Lane, with Lex Luthor as we get towards the end of the day. I think I was particularly struck by the last panel of the issue. There's this theme of Lex Luthor looking at his painting, and he's just waiting for Superman to burst through. And he's like, why isn't he here yet? Wait a second. Did Lois not tell him about the cancer? And then he calls up Lois and he's like, why didn't you tell him about the cancer? What are we doing? That last panel, the palpable anticipation of what is Superman going to do now that he knows,
yeah,
gives so much tension going to the next issue. I think it's great.
I agree with you. Like, I really enjoy this. Like, to take your Tom King comparison, I wouldn't make it that hard, but this book definitely sets up ideas and then pays them off in sort of a more direct way, with like the same big emotionality and all that. So shouts to that. I think this is great. I'm going to be sad when this series is over.
I was having a lot more fun with this before we went in the cancer route. Also, I don't like Lois calling Lex that much. I don't like all that interaction. I don't like when Supes is having a lot of interaction with Lex.
They're buddies.
I don't like that.
They grew up together in Smallville. They were friends.
Canonically.
Yeah, this is getting less and less enjoyable. And then Superman being a dick to Kara was not enjoyable either. So art's unbelievable.
I gotta say, I know we talked about this in the last issue, but more and more as we head towards the end, I think the title is less about Superman being lost and Superman losing. I think that's what we're going to end up with here.
Oh, that's a cool idea.
So
should we call it Superman Slowly Loses His Shit?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see what happens, but I don't think you're going to be happy at the end here, Pete, is my suspicion. Let's move on to a big issue, Uncanny Avengers, number 4 from Marvel, written by Jerry Duggan, art by Javier Duran. Yes, the Dukes himself. So there's been this big mystery that has been running through the Marvel Universe for at least the past couple of issues of this, where who is Captain Krakoa?
Yeah,
Captain
who is Krakoa, the broccoli
is this character
Captain
who's
America?
Resurrected by Orcus, has been leading a new liberation front, but really been working for Orcus, and the Uncanny Avengers have been fighting against him. Big spoilers here.
Broccoli that comes out of his helmet.
There's broccoli that comes out of his helmet, and as we know, broccoli is gross. Ew.
Yucky.
The reveal happens at the end of this issue, so this is a big spoiler here. but it's what we thought it was.
We threw a lot of other wild ideas out there, and the fact that it was just the most boilerplate one, fine. But it would have been cooler if it was Strife, like we said.
I agree. It should have been Strife. Everybody agrees it should have been Strife, but...
Everybody agrees.
But I will say, the way that Jerry Dugan relays it out here in terms of... It's Hydra Cap, to be clear, is that, okay, Cap was resurrected by mutants and now he's fighting for mutants. Hydra Cap was resurrected by humans and now he's fighting for humans. Makes a lot of sense here. And setting up as an antagonist is, I think, very smart to give Cap an ultimate opposite here. Pete, you were a huge fan of the Secret Empire storyline when it was coming out. What did you think about the reveal on this issue?
Well, yeah, I don't care. I did like the Psylocke stuff that we got, and the Deadpool stuff was great. The part about him getting cut in half was hilarious.
Okay.
I will say those were two very fun bits. Deadpool gets cut in half and slowly slides off the sword and says BRB. Very funny.
Very funny.
And then Psylocke jumping out and chopping off the Strucker twins' hands. Gross.
Badass.
Badass. Also Deadpool's reaction of like, I wonder why I was on this team. This is why. And his job is to pick up their hands. Also a fun bit.
Yeah.
And I just think this is a surprisingly funny, gross book in this, the sort of position it's in the X, the Fall of X storyline. And I love that. As far as the reveal, like, that's fine. I don't know what the ramifications are of that because it's such an expected reveal. It feels like he'll be defeated pretty quickly. Like, I don't know. It doesn't feel like it's a far-reaching thing. It feels like it's a short-term thing. But the longer-term things are this couple romance things happening here. I guess one romance thing happening here. And
Monet and Quicksilver.
Yeah, Monet and Quicksilver, which I'm really into. And their great Black Widow moment. Where Wildside is like, I'll show you your worst memory. And she's like, haha, I don't give a fuck. Bang, or whatever.
That is very cool. I agree with you on the long-term ramifications. Thinking about, like, I don't know. I know a lot of people disagree with me. But what Nick Spencer was trying to do with Hydra Cap is reflect the U.S. government and the outside world, which... I thought it was a very smart idea. However it panned out, I understand why he went in that direction with that storyline. I don't know potentially what having Hydra Cap in the Marvel Universe does now, unless somebody does something similarly and specifically political in a very similar way. You know, so we're certainly heading towards a time with the presidential election where you could do a lot with that. But I don't know if they will so much as he's bad Cap and that's it. But
well, that's what it feels like. It doesn't feel like there are larger political ramifications here.
Yeah. Fish Flies, number 3 from Image Comics by Jeff Lemire. This is about a criminal who has turned into a big old fish fly and the snotty girl who is friends with him. Things really go down in this issue. I love this book. This seems like Jeff Lemire getting back to his roots of character-based sci-fi storytelling, which we saw in Sweet Tooth and other things. Great stuff.
Feels like a classic Sweet Tooth, and I like that. But still feeling like a separate world. There's just a lot of tension and dread hovering over a lot of the interactions in this issue. And then a couple sort of like, oh, that's what you do when you want a monster or friendly animal to run away from you. You throw a rock at them, and they're just really nice moves throughout.
Yeah, the each issue gets better and better, and I like it. At first, I was like, what the fuck are we doing? But now I'm really into it. I was very moved by this issue. The line where it's like, you came back. Nobody comes back was so powerful and beautiful and sad. But yeah, I was just so happy with where this kind of ended with the two of them kind of BFFs forever. And hopefully nothing bad will ever happen to them.
BFFs forever.
That's quite a thing. So you love Fish Flies because it's perfect. That's what I'm getting for you for your housewarming.
Nope.
Hundreds and hundreds of fish flies.
Please don't.
The Vigil, number 6 from DC Comics, written by Ram V, art by Dev Malia Promenik. This is the final issue of this title, which is surprising. This was a surprising way, I think, to end this series because we had such big revelations in the previous issue about the reality of what was going on with these characters. Here they're dealing with the fallout there, and we get a little bit of resolution, but it feels like to me there's a lot more story to tell. I really like the series. I wish there was more.
Me too. I've enjoyed this, all of the run here, and all the characters I think are really interesting. Feels like a Valiant book from like years ago in a good way. I mean that as a compliment. And this is the kind of book I feel like we really need to in DC and Marvel to reinvigorate just the character pool and new superhero teams and all that. Fun, original take. They're in the bleed. Let's see more of them.
Yeah, this was really impressive. The creepy smile kid really freaked me the fuck out. It's sad to see it go. This was really creative and cool.
Oh, Pete just ran out of energy. Daredevil number 3 from Marvel, written by Saladin Ahmed, art by Aaron Cooter and Farid Karabi. In this issue, can Daredevils have it all? Can they be both priests and vigilantes? I don't know, man. You know, like they're having trouble.
The answer is no.
Because, pick a lane, priest or vigilante, both great, well-paying jobs.
One thing that I really liked about that issue, I know I'm being glib here, but I've been wondering what the big move was with this new run, because you always get that with Daredevil. I don't know if it's sustainable long-term, but this is the first issue that I really felt like they were driving down on that divide, that idea of like, he's a priest during the day, not a lawyer anymore. Now he is a vigilante at night. You can't actually do that because a priest is a 24-hour-a-day job. So I think that's really
interesting. Is that true? Are priests just like phones ringing?
This issue
tries to say that the local priest is like, I got another voicemail from my parishioners. They're on my ass to do some stuff.
I don't know. If I know anything from TV and movies, whenever somebody walks into a church, the priest is there and eager to offer advice.
Exactly.
Surely there's a rotation. I would have a couple priests just like
identical.
I do a 6
Yeah, but when stuff goes down in the church.
Matching priests.
Yeah.
Yeah, match those priests. Well, they dress alike.
What's interesting,
you can't
I find
tell the difference.
What's interesting that I find in this issue is Daredevil's a little harder than I've seen him in a while. Like I'm a little worried about his mental state. I mean, he's very dark. Wow. In this,
what a take.
Is
usually
like,
the steadiest of characters.
Well, I know what you're saying, but I don't like how much he's looking forward to hurting people. Mm-hmm. The fact that he talks about how he's going to enjoy the pain that he's inflicting, I don't like that, especially if he's supposed to be this priest kind of godlike vessel. I'm like, yo, dude, what the fuck is going on? I also think there's some real badass Daredevil moments in this where like the crane like takes out the two dudes standing behind him. That was really fucking cool. I'm really worried about how dark Daredevil is becoming.
It sounds like his religious beliefs are causing him to repress certain feelings that are then coming out in other ways, which I see that. The other thing I think is like the story replaces a lot of other Daredevil stories have him in a relationship with someone that he's constantly like feeling guilty about and not really being a good partner to. And they've replaced that with these kids in his charge. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, in most Daredevil stories, it ends with that woman being either killed or somehow go through a horrible tragedy. I don't know what they're going to do now.
You don't
that
think
it's
they
a
can murder all the
kids.
Children?
Well, I know. I hope not. And I also just don't know if we're following that same pattern. I don't know where it's going to lead, because this, like, to your point, Alex, it feels like it is really that sort of like classic Daredevil. Like, I can't balance my life between the two things I'm doing.
Well, and to the point Pete is making, I think what we're getting here very clearly is he is a man of God during the day, and he is a man of the devil, literally, like dressing like a devil at night. I love that concept, and I love that they're driving in on that. I hope that they continue it, because I think it's very interesting. So we'll
I like that, too. I want to get more of the devil side. I feel like we had more of the demonic side of it in the issues before this, and now that's completely left out here.
Yep. Well, we'll see. Something Epic, number 7 from Image Comics by Szymon Kondransky. This is not the final issue of the
series.
Surprisingly, it's going to continue. It's been following this guy who has been wrestling with his own creativity and depression, ultimately discovering he is called an epic who has the power to create imaginary worlds. I love the art in this book, and I love the writing in this book, but I've been a little disappointed with the direction that more explicitly put it in a superpowers fantasy type way versus the more metaphorical way that the first couple of issues existed in. But what do you guys think about this first arc and how it wrapped up?
I feel like I like the way, because I agree with you, like it sort of felt like it was covering really original territory, and then it got a little bit more expected for the last couple issues. I think this sort of pulled it out and leaned back into the creative side of it in a good way. I am curious where the story goes from here. This feels like what was going to be the end of the story, and now we're pushing through into something new. So I hope the new arc can pay off what this series is setting up, that creativity rules all, and what that means for the future of this character.
Creativity rules. Yeah, I agree. I thought this was the end. It kind of came to a natural conclusion here. I did feel like some issues felt more epic than others, but I think it did a good job of kind of righting the ship or landing it here in this one. I liked what it was saying about creativity and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, the art is just really impressive in this book, the way it can handle a lot of different moods and tones and still feel like the same comic is very impressive.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. Just to be clear, I think it didn't 100% go back to the, is it real, is it not real nature of the first couple of issues, but it did dive in very deeply into the nature of creativity and how we create things and how that affects us mentally as artists. So I think that's the core of the book, not the powers part of it. And I like that. So I don't know. We'll see. I'm interested to see how it kicks off the next arc. Wesley Dodds, The Sandman, number 2 from DC Comics, written by Robert Venditti, art by Riley Rosmo.
Yeah.
A classic Sandman character is investigating a weird arsonist mystery back in the day while his mind might be cracking up, potentially. Other than the Riley Rosmo art, which is gorgeous as usual, what did you think about this book?
Well, you can't say that. You can't take away all the fun things that I wanted to say about Riley Rosmo's art, because it's unbelievable and worth it for the art alone. It's so enjoyable. It's just, it's a whole nother level. But fine, Zelbatron, we'll talk about the other things. I think they do a great job with this pace and storytelling, and it's fun to see the character kind of stumbling and going through stuff like this. So, yeah, I'm very much enjoying this.
I believe the future of comics is an artless world where it's just words.
An artless world.
Yeah.
Just it's all words.
Just words. Just words.
And different bubbles. The bubbles are different.
Well, can you give us me some blank pages in between the words so I can catch my breath a little bit or no?
Yeah, wow. I'm underwater with all these words. Shouts to Nate Bargatze and his SNL monologue. This book, I love this. This is, I'm a fan of the Wesley Dodds Sandman character going back to his time in the JSA.
Well-timed shirt. Look at this. A well-timed shirt.
And the great four-part story in Starman, which was fantastic. That is the shirt I'm wearing. This is a great extension of that. The Riley Rosmo art is essential to this. It's so good and gives us a nice old-timey feel, if I can use words that Pete didn't say but might. And I'm going to keep loving this.
Fantastic Four, number 13 for Marvel, written by Ryan North, art by Iben Coelho. This is the second part of a two-part story where the Fantastic Four have previously ended up in a dimension which is a dinosaur dimension where everybody is dinosaurs. They fought the Avengers, figured out how to talk to them. Now the Thing is going back to the regular Marvel universe where a Fantastic Four that is made up of dinosaurs has ended up, as well as a Doctor Doom dinosaur that is teamed up with Doctor Doom. I don't know how you could not love a comic book where Dr. Doom Tyrannosaurus Rex teams up with Dr. Doom. The Thing rides a Thing dinosaur. This is a delight from front to back.
Taken very seriously throughout. I think this is great. I love the amount of science that's injected in here. It's like you learn as you read this, and then this issue references back to other things we've learned in the past. Love that. And I love that we're moving into a different phase next issue.
I mean, the cover has Dr. Doom riding a Dr. Doom T-Rex. So, I mean, if you aren't looking at that going, oh, I want to enjoy this, then yeah, don't pick it up, because that's all it is. And it's a lot of fun. Although the puns got a little... It got a little too punny for me, but it was still really fun. No.
Pete, what if a Pete Rex shows up at your new home? Are you like, all aboard, let's go for a ride?
Dr. Doom saying, if it's not one thing, it's another, talking about the Thing riding a Thing down. I was just like, all right, Dr. Doom isn't going to do
it. It's having so much fun. And
it's very fun.
I will also say, like, on a plot perspective, Ryan North's clear knowledge and fun with the Fantastic Four is so good. The idea that, like, for a change, the Things got to beat the Doctor Dooms.
Great.
Like, and even like the reference at the end there where he's like, yeah, I don't know. We've faced him enough. I kind of got the beat on that.
You got a handle on him.
Yeah. I love that. Like, there's this offhand humor to this book that's so much fun.
Yeah.
I'm just having a blast reading it.
What's your dino? What the dino universe? What dino are we looking at for this Albin and the LePage?
Well, you asked. You got something queued up there, Smarty Pants?
I mean, I always have a dino on deck.
What is it?
A dino on deck. Well, you say yours.
No, I want to. You started.
Mine's Ankylosaurus, the tank.
Oh yeah,
Ank badass the tank? Bone tail. Ank oh, the tank, yeah. bone tail. That's a badass dino. Can't fuck with him.
I don't know. Stegosaurus, maybe?
Spike? You got look, yeah, like spines?
Yeah, I got spines. I got spines, but like I'm sort of lumbering along and I'm a vegetarian.
Lumbering. Pete?
Pterodactyl.
Pterodactyl! I wouldn't have guessed that.
Get up above it all, you know what I mean?
Above it all? What is the dinosaur that's like in the muck biting all the other dinosaurs? Raptor. You're a raptor.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. We figured it out. Earth Divers, number 12 from IDW, written by Stephen Graham Jones, art by David Gianfelice. There's a new arc of this book that is all about folks going back in time and trying to change the history of the United States. Here they are going back to the signing of the Declaration of Independence, I believe, trying to change Benjamin Franklin's history in particular. We also wrap around to the first arc of the book. I am not 100% sure what is going on in this book at all times, but I am more sure of what's going on in terms of the time travel plot from the first arc to this third arc than I was with the second arc.
Definitely. I think that's like where we know the history era we're in pretty well, I think, as like Revolutionary War. And I, like, to your point, I like this book. I don't always know what's happening directly, but the world is really nice. I like the idea that the goal in 1776 is to inject some different language into the Declaration of Independence. Like, they have different missions for each time period. So that part is cool and interesting. The flash forwards to modern day, I don't quite know what those mean yet, though.
Yeah, amazing arc. Loved where it ends up. Like the second half really felt like it picked up and was clicking. Love the Vision part, and I'm excited to read more.
I always like the part of our review podcast where we get to Pete saying, I'm excited to read more at the end of every review. Terror wow. War number 7. That's what I know. It's gotten very late at night. Terror War
he
number
is
7.
Excited to read more.
Yeah, you're like the canary in the coal mine, but for time. Terror War number 7 from Image Comics, written by Saladin Ahmed, art by Dave Acosta. Some big stuff going down in this issue as we find out exactly what the terrors are that have been attacking the city. It all gets laid out for our terror fighting crew. They split up in different directions, leading into, I believe, the finale next issue, if I remember correctly. I thought this series is great. Like, this is a big action-y series with a little bit more on its mind in terms of how we view the other, you know, people who we fight these terror wars on. So it's framing a big, very specific political idea in something that is more accessible and fun. And the art by Dave Acosta is great. Like, there's some very goopy stuff, but it's
I was going to say, you
goopy.
I don't like goop and carnage. Yeah, I like goop
Alex. Here. There's some goop.
There is some goop, but I like this goop. Goop, there it is.
Goop, there it is. I mean, I take away all that stuff. I guess I wish the world had a little bit more specificity to it from a sci-fi point of view. It feels a little bit like it's a wash and getting to these original ideas. And I think we could just have a little bit more specificity with the characters in the larger world.
I wrote it's a lot of gross, gloopy action going on, but a great 80s hair. I loved how
a lot
it
of great hair. Mm-hmm.
Excited to read more, Pete? Pete hates me.
Wow.
World's Finest Teen Titans number 5 from DC Comics, written by Mark Waid, art by Emanuela Lupacino. We are once again getting sort of a done-in-one issue featuring classic versions of the Teen Titans, but it is finally starting to tie into the greater plot of the series. What'd you guys think about this one?
I mean, this is a tough times for everybody, huh? Mm-hmm. These Teen Titans aren't doing so hot. Pete? Anybody Pete? Else? Were you sweating this? You rarely see a team, especially like the Teen Titans, take this many L's as what happens in this issue.
I did like the end here, and I do really like Emanuela Lupacino's art. It is... I'm thinking there's a specific artist that I'm thinking of that it's very similar. It's not exactly Cliff Chiang, but like it's in that direction a little bit. And I like looking at that quite a bit. This is also just Mark Waid having fun with the classic Titans. So I do like that. But like you said, it was a bummer of an issue at the same time.
Well, but and I don't mean that in a negative way. Like, I like that. And I like the art is fantastic. But like Mark Waid has such a command of all the individual personalities here. So I think each story is taking us, there's a lot going on, but everybody gets their due over the course of it, even the villains.
Yeah, I feel like this is just classic kind of a DC action here, which is great. And, fantastic art, fun last panel, good stuff.
The Immortal Thor, number 4 from Marvel, written by Al Ewing, art by Martin Coccello. The original God of Thunder is coming directly for Thor, and he makes some big moves here, inspired by Loki. I have been, like, literally, I think, back and forth on this title. Like, I liked the first issue, was kind of iffy about the second issue, was also iffy maybe about the third issue. This issue, I loved. This was so good. This is Thor essentially recruiting Storm against her will, and Storm being like, no, leave me. What
I'm
are you
busy.
Doing?
My, I'm busy. Mutants are falling right now.
Yes. And so we get a great fight between Storm and Thor that is so much fun and explores their powers in interesting ways and the differences between them. We get such an awesome build up to the end. This is so much fun.
Well, and we get a build-up to Thor forming a core of Thors for only like 60-ish seconds.
Yeah.
Which is dope. This reminds me of like Jason Aaron. And I not to take anything away from Al Ewing, but in the same way that Jason Aaron was like, would crack an idea about Thor and just be like, this is what it is. this is doing that in a, in an interesting, surprising, unique way. Great. And then we get this like sort of 4-page coda to that, the Thor core, getting us into some Roxxon stuff that looks horrifying and touching on the more corporate elements.
You into Thor Jason core, Aaron's. Bro?
I'm in Thor core. I do parkour and Thor core, and that's it.
Yeah, I mean, I there's a lot of really awesome, nerdy kind of moments in this that are very cool that I didn't think I would see. And then you got Thor playing catch with all of his Thor buddies with the hammer. So it's like hot potato. And yeah, it's a lot of fun.
So cool. And I just want to mention, just to dive in on the coda as well that involves Roxxon that Justin was talking about, there is some absolutely wild meta stuff that happens the end of this issue that,
like, I couldn't believe it was in there.
Yeah. It's I don't know what this series is going to be next issue, but I'm very excited to check it out. The Oddly Pedestrian Life of Christopher Chaos, number 5 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Tate Bromble, art by Isaac Goodhart. We're getting some big revelations here involving our monster characters as they fight against a bunch of, they're not called Helsings, but essentially like a bunch of monster hunters, I guess you could call it.
Sort of vaguely religious monster hunters.
This issue was super fun. The really Adam fun. Frankenstein character is such a great addition to the cast. Everything that he does, from the organ that shoots lightning and sinks the church to underground, the difference where I think he's like, this is soccer, and he's like, no, it's called monster ball because monsters were playing it. Very fun. I just really enjoyed this issue.
I know why you like it, because I think this book is like later seasons of Buffy. Mm-hmm. I feel like they've taken that spirit and sort of built it into this book. And it is good. Like, it is fun. The characters are fun. There's so many different monstery genre things wrapped up here, but it doesn't feel like we're stuck in any one at any time. It feels like a whole new thing. If you're a Buffy fan, check this out.
Yeah, this is really cool. Love the art style, the cool monster underground. I love the world that we get to see and how much time we kind of are spent in this new world. Very funny ending. Yeah, I can't wait to see what's next.
The Cull, number 4. That's what's next. From Image Comics, written by Kelly Thompson, art by Mattea De Luis. In the last issue, our main characters headed back for the real world that they had escaped to and came back to the real world with a bunch of new powers, only to discover it had been wrecked by some giant creatures. Here we're looping back to the beginning of the series and moving forward from there as they reconnect with their families. This has pivoted from very dark Narnia style tale to now like War of the Worlds, the Mist style story. I am bowled over by the big swings this story is taking. I can't believe that it is ending next issue because I have what's going to happen. And the art by Mattea De Luis is just like iconic, gorgeous. I don't know if you guys ever read the Chris Van Allsburg books, The Mysteries of Harris Burdock and other things like that. This feels like that, but ongoing to me, if anybody out there has read that stuff. Great. This is like firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, I think Kelly Thompson's having a renaissance right now
with
the creator-owned stuff that she's doing, as well as Tom Sonnesance, as we're calling it, as well as all the other stuff that she's doing. So, and this book is right in line with that. It's fantastic. The art's amazing. If you're a Stranger Things fan, I would read this.
Yeah, I mean, shit gets crazy at the end of this comic. It's really epic in awesome ways. I don't want to spoil it, but man, just unbelievable. And the art, can't say enough about it. Super tight bananas.
Really great stuff. Definitely pick up this book. Catwolf and the Howling Commandos, number 2 from Marvel, written by Stan.
Howling.
You see what they did there?
I do. I do get it.
And then
because he's a wolf and they're howling. Written by Stephanie Phillips, art by Carlo Magno. Steve Rogers, right at the beginning of his career in World War II, has gotten scratched by a werewolf, and now he has become a werewolf himself. He's got to fight a bunch of Nazi werewolves in the meantime, as well as figuring out his teamwork with the Howling Commandos. I don't know why you can be mad at a book about werewolf Captain America fighting Nazi werewolves. That's fun.
I mean, that's just fun. That's just a great idea. Fun execution. Love the art of it all. And yeah, I just think, you know, that whole line about like let at the end, the kind of rallying cry of like, let's go kill some werewolf Nazis was great. It's just, it's what you think you're signing up for and they deliver.
It's funny that Cap Wolf's a thing where everyone's like, well, Cap Wolf, that's
real. Yeah, Cap Wolf.
It's like, okay, that's an ongoing thing. It also struck me in this that back in World War II, they just, everyone's fine with getting injected with stuff.
Oh, yeah,
everyone's like, yeah, I'll take a serum. I'll take a little juice. Turn me into something. I'll go fight this war. Well, I'm the greatest generation. I'm the greatest juiced generation. Take that, Tom Brokaw. How many big army powers were like, let's get a witch in here. Let's get a little witchy lady in here and see what she's got to say.
Probably a lot. It's weird that, not to criticize Nazis or anything, but it's weird that Nazis are like, let's get this half-naked witch lady to help us out, because it feels like that's not something would Nazis would do. That feels like against their whole philosophy, but...
I don't know. They seem pretty impressionable, the Nazis. They're just like, oh, I'll do whatever you say.
Yeah.
The person in charge.
Sounds good. Nazis.
But I do like Cap Wolf. I like that he talks. I like everyone's like, hey, don't shoot him. He's our friend.
Yeah. If you stop shooting Cap Wolf, we could really go win this thing.
He's vaguely wearing Captain America's shirt.
Yeah.
He's our wolf.
Operation Sunshine, number 2 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Henry Zebrowski and Marcus Parks, art by David Rubin. This is about a bunch of vampires that have been tasked with stealing a relic that is going to potentially give them their humanity back. We're getting, after they were given their mission in the last issue, a little bit of them like playing a little wait and see game before they pull off a heist, which I was kind of surprised about. I thought we were going to go straight into the heist thing. But I continue to love the humor in this book. I love the characterizations. Yeah. And almost more than that, I love the art style. Like,
oh, the art is something else. The
exaggeration of the characters. I don't know. I called it out as like Mad Magazine in the first issue.
Yeah.
That's not exactly right. Like, it's on that spectrum, but it's something entirely different. And I'm just really enjoying what everybody looks like in this book.
Yes. Same. I agree. The world that it pulls you into is so creative and cool, and it's got like this real feel to it, and it's just it's very interesting and creative. I love the kind of like evil villain monologue we get in this. You can tell the people working on this have a great sense of humor, and it kind of really comes through. This is just such a fun, cool comic that is really well drawn.
Shouts to our guy, Henry Zebrowski.
Yeah.
He's in the fam. And this is a great book.
Last but not least, The Forged, number 6 from Image Comics, written by Greg Rucka and Eric Trautman, art by Mike Henderson. Our Forged, our big warriors, are on the, I guess it's a throne world, hanging out with the Empress and a bunch of other related characters. But there are forces that are allied against them, and ultimately, by the end, they're going to have to fight the first alien intelligence that has encroached on their universe. This continues to be big and wild sci-fi that feels very European to me. I think part of that is like the larger size of the pages and the issue, but also just in terms of the pacing and the ideas and everything. And it's also down to Mike Henderson's art, which these characters...
Fantastic.
Are so good. You know, something, I mean, we talk about this on the show a lot, but my son, who has been reading comics, we ended up talking a little bit about, like, he asked me, I think it was, why does Carol Danvers and this other character who is blonde look the same? And he was asking me about theories on that. I was like, well, the reason is, artists generally are like, I know one body type and I draw that and then I just paint costumes on there. That's it. The characters here in The Forged are different. They're different body types. Yes. And honestly, like, I appreciate seeing that. I would rather see people that look different. I know it's harder, but please do that because it looks better as a comic book.
Definitely. And on top of that, this story is so good. Like, it is, we get a high tension Soderbergh, like Ocean's 11 style, telling of how of a murder plot, which is great, and then a second fantastic battle sequence that has like a almost like Fifth Element like playfulness to it. Like, this book is just it's doing a lot, but it's just a very fun light read at the same time. Greg Rucka, I feel like, can just do so much, and this is a tone I haven't seen from him in a long time. So I was very happy to see it.
Agree with everything you guys are saying. It's just really epic. I love all the badass action. The art is so smooth and cool as shit. This comic rocks. More, please.
And that is it for the stack. If you would, if you would like to support us, please do so at patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Good night from Pterodactyl, Ankylosaurus, and Alex's Steg. That blows your mind.